Momentum of Women, the podcast to bring you insights of successful women leaders. I'm your host, Sherry Hilton. And whether you're a working professional looking to level up, an aspiring entrepreneur, or simply curious about the stories of women who are making a difference, this podcast is for you. Our guests come from diverse backgrounds and industries, but they all share one thing in common. They've overcome challenges and achieved success through hard work, determination, and a willingness to take risks. They will tell their personal journeys, the lessons they've learned along the way, and the wisdom they've gained. Join me each week as we dive into the experiences and perspectives of extraordinary women and discover the inspiration and motivation you need to achieve your own goals. So without further ado, let's get started. Hello, everyone, and welcome to this episode of Wisdom of Women. Today, our guest, Dr. Libby McGugin, is a physician. She lives in Scotland. She's a medical doctor who practiced 20 years, was in the emergency room for 10 of those years. She's a published author and a TEDx speaker, and she specializes on, I think, a topic that's going to be pretty impactful and powerful to a lot of our women listeners. You know, it's relating stress and the human body and our thoughts. Hi, Dr. McGugin. How are you today?
I'm fine, Sherry. Lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you. So you have a published book, The Power of the Lemon.
Yes.
Let's start off there. When did you write the book and what prompted you to write it?
Okay. So the book was published in December last year. And I wrote it actually quite quickly. I wrote it in September in just a matter of weeks. It's really a collection of insights I've had over the years, really since leaving my post in emergency medicine 10 years ago. So it's a collection of, I guess, wisdom that I've gained through my own experience and from learning from other people along the way. So,
yeah. And 10 years in emergency medicine, you look at stress and how it affects our physical and emotional and our professional health. So is that the premise of the book? Because in your TEDx talk, you mentioned there was a Kathy and a Kate, and you talked about the thought, the power behind the thought, and how it transformed, and you know, just inspiring people to overcome remarkable health challenges in that TEDx talk. Like it really just sparked something in me, and I thought, man, this is powerful, and so many women can learn so much from that. So tell us a little bit about the meat of the book.
Okay, well, I guess I could tell you a wee bit about those amazing women first.
Yeah.
Can I do that? Yeah.
Yeah, let's start there.
Yeah, okay. So Kathy and Kate. Kate was really the lady that made me leave my job, because when I met her, it stopped me in my tracks. She was a lady who'd had, who was a very fit, healthy mother, you know, active in her, you know, professional life. And she was out running one day and collapsed with a headache and woke up a few weeks later in intensive care, having had a brainstem stroke. So she had a condition called locked-in syndrome, mm-hmm. Which means that she could think and she could hear and see, but she couldn't move anything. So she couldn't communicate and couldn't move. So she was facing, she couldn't breathe either on her own without a ventilator. So she was facing a lifetime of care, 24 hours. But through various things that happened, she basically decided that she wasn't going to settle for that. So she began practicing imagining her body moving again. And she started with her big toe, if I remember correctly, and she began practicing the thought of her toe moving. And, you know, nothing happened for 2 or 3 weeks, but then finally her toe began to move, but she couldn't tell anyone because she was still locked in.
Yeah.
And the thing about her brainstem stroke is that there was no cure available through the medical route for her. You know, they were giving her complete support, but there's only so much that they could do, and it wasn't something that could be reversed medically. But she persisted, and through practice she managed to retrain her entire body from, you know, from the feet up to move again. She taught herself to swallow, to, you know, to speak, to, you know, once the medical team got on board and realized what was happening, they were behind her and they helped her. But she, 9 months later, after going into hospital, she walked out of hospital. And 3 months after that, she went running. So
what a miracle.
Absolutely. So, you know, it just made me realize, you know, looking at how she did it, I met her and I've spoken to her many times, and the power of her focus and her practiced imagination overcame what was essentially something that wasn't curable. Now, she says herself, you know, this is something that she managed to achieve. And Kathy's another lady who had end-stage cancer, who had a similar turn of events, you know, where she turned things around for herself against the odds. And it's not to say that this is guaranteed for people, but it's to just open it up as a possibility that yeah. This is possible. People have done it. People are doing it. And more we're realizing the power of the connection between the mind and the body. So I guess perhaps a way to illustrate it is the book is called, that I wrote, it's called The Power of the Lemon. Mm-hmm. And just as a little example, you can try this just now if you like, but if you just close your eyes for a moment and imagine that you're in your kitchen with a big, fat, juicy, yellow lemon in front of you
yeah.
on the chopping board, and very carefully just cut the lemon into quarters. And then if you just gently bring one of those quarters up towards your mouth and your nose and your lips, you can smell that, excuse me, that citrusy smell from it. And I want you to sink your teeth into it and just take a big bite of the lemon. So what do you notice when you do that?
It's sour. Like I can immediately think about puckering. Like,
okay.
You yeah. know, because I know what a lemon tastes like.
Yeah. And did you feel the kind of saliva build up?
Yeah.
In yeah.
So exactly.
Most people have that response. And when you just stand back a little bit and look at it, there is no lemon. Like there's no lemon there.
Yeah.
So we're not responding. Our body has a physiological response, not to a lemon, but to a thought about a lemon.
Yeah.
And that's instantaneous. So when you begin to see that that's happening all the time, you begin to realize that our cells are actually listening to the mm-hmm. thoughts that we're putting out. So it really helps. It's such a practical and helpful thing for our own well-being. If we begin to focus in a way that allows us to produce thoughts that are more nurturing for ourselves, for our cells. Women in particular can be very critical of their bodies, of their appearance, and of, you know, they can have high standards. But the thing is, our body hears that, our cells hear that. And there's something very powerful about stepping back a bit and just beginning to nurture your cells with choosing thoughts that are actually better for them.
Yeah, I tell my girl, I have two daughters, and I tell my daughters all the time, you know, you wouldn't say that to someone else. Why would you say it to yourself?
Exactly.
You know, and I think a lot of times we're very critical as females, mm-hmm. You know, either type A, you know, I'm a very overachiever, and it's sometimes it feels like it's not enough, or I'm not doing X, Y, Z. And it's, we have to step back and give ourselves grace a lot of times, because it's, if you always feel like you're not enough, your body feels that. It internalizes it.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's a really important point, Sherry, because these signals, these thoughts that seem to be just passing thoughts, if we repeatedly think them, they become hardwired into our neural circuitry, and they become signals that are repeatedly sent out to our cells. And what they're hearing is there's a threat, or I'm not good enough, or there's a problem. So they begin to subliminally sit in a state of not red alert, but chronic stress. You know, mm-hmm. they're slightly on edge, because there's this feeling that there's a threat around. So it just doesn't allow them to function properly and freely if they're having to, you know, kind of prepare for the next threat. So cultivating a climate where there's a sense of ease, a sense of nurturing, like you do with your girls. You know, you look after your children this way with nurturing, supportive, loving comments. Do the same thing with yourselves because they're like your children.
Yeah. So similar to like a fight or flight response, and your body goes into generating cortisol, which is that stress response that you're going to end up feeling and wreaking havoc to other parts of your body that you don't physically see until much later when it takes effect.
Absolutely. I mean, all of your systems can be affected by this. You know, your immune system, if it's on alert, you know, autoimmune conditions can flare up as a result of stress. And stress, when you get right to the root of it, is essentially overthinking. It's kind of, and overthinking is the biggest addiction in the Western world, more than anything. So beginning to get on top of this, beginning to see that we don't have to buy into these thoughts, that we have a choice, is one of the most empowering steps we can take in our lives to just bring the control back to what we would prefer for our, you know, for our bodies.
Yeah, I think in your talk, you spoke about feeling optimism and hopelessness and the studies on people who feel hopeless and how that correlates to heart disease.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they have shown that your state of mind correlates to your state of health, you know, chronically. So if you live, and this is all innocent, people don't mean to do this. You know, we don't mean to grow up and be hopeless. It's just that we absorb patterns of thinking from other people, and we don't realize, we just assume that that's the truth. So we buy into it again and again, and that can generate a climate of hopelessness, which, again, because it affects all of your systems, they don't function so well. So they're more prone to condition, to diseases and malfunction and so on. Whereas if you're consciously creating a climate of optimism and hope, and, you know, just generally being more joyful in your life as much as you can, it's a good thing for your body.
Yeah, I think I wrote down some notes, like repetitive practice to thought and focusing on your intention. So what are some tips and tools that you might offer some women on how to intentionally reverse the thoughts or generate positive thoughts to affect them in a better way?
That's a really, really good question. And I think because we can use intention, some people use affirmations, but in my experience, it's the state of being that you're in when you say them that matters. Okay, so if you are tense and worried and fearful about something, and you try and create an intention or an affirmation, it's not so likely to work.
Yeah.
So I would say one of the most important things that any of us can realize is that we have the ability to just let go of thinking when it feels like it's a contraction. So if we're feeling tense in our thinking, the practice of just for a moment letting go of all thought opens you up to a sense of spaciousness and ease. And from that space, if you then set an intention or create an affirmation and lightly focus, so you're not trying to fix, you're not trying to make something happen, you're just open and available to the possibility of it actually happening, it's way more powerful. Recognizing, again, one of the most important things that I've learned in the past 10 years is that we have these two states of being. We're either caught in our thinking, which can, you know, our personal minds or our egos get caught in a cycle of thought that's often not helpful. But beyond that, when we let go of thinking, we're actually open and available to new thought, to fresh ideas, to wisdom that flows through us. And that level of wisdom will guide us in any moment. It will guide us with, you know, what's best to eat, what's best for exercise. If we need to go and see a doctor, we can trust it to actually guide us in the moment to do what's right for us.
Yeah. And do you find that it's in that practice of just slowing down and being more mindful? Because I feel as women, especially working women or women with families or caregivers to our parents and children or just all around life, the busyness of life, that sometimes we rush from one thing to the next without slowing down and being mindful and being intentional. And, you know, I myself, right, I suffer from TMJ. I have my entire life, you know, as an adolescent through my adult years. And so my body manifests stress. I can feel it. Like I intentionally know when I'm stressing or when I'm doing too much because my body gives me that signal. And I've learned to recognize it and go, okay, Sherry, what are you stressing about? You know, what are you not slowing down for to live in the moment or practice being present? And I find when I take two steps back and I'm more mindful and I'm more open to allowing life a little bit more as opposed to me trying to force life, it makes the difference. So when you say step back and pause and be open, how can, gosh, as a physician, I'm going to ask you, like, I'm sure there's some tricks. How can women slowly integrate that into their life? Because sometimes that's easier said than done.
Yeah. I think there are a few things here. Because women do have a lot on their plate, juggling all aspects of life.
Yeah.
But it's so important to recognize that we also have a rhythm. You know, there are times when we'll be completely going for things and, you know, we can juggle lots of things at once. There are times when we're actually, we need to rest a bit more or ease back a bit more. And as you said yourself, you know, your body's like a tuning fork. It mm-hmm. will tell you when you're stressing. You can feel it as a contraction or, you know, attention. So beginning to listen to your body is the first thing, and recognize, wait, I'm feeling tense. Okay, I'm stressing, or I'm thinking, I'm focusing on a line of thought that's not helpful. So just noticing to begin with is really important. And what to do about it, I would say, is the first thing is take a few breaths, because simply consciously breathing, bringing your awareness to your breath, noticing how it feels as it goes through your nostrils, through your, you know, into the back of your throat, into your lungs, feeling your lungs expand. You know, it's like you're breathing in fresh energy and you're breathing out what you don't need anymore. Mm-hmm. So just being conscious of your breath will reset your physiology just with a few conscious deep breaths. It does all kinds of things. You know, it reduces your fight or flight. It brings up your parasympathetic nervous system, which is more of your repair and restoring side of things. It opens up your prefrontal cortex, which is your decision-making center. It slows your heart rate. It reduces your blood pressure. So it may seem like it's trivial, but taking a few deep breaths is actually very powerful in resetting your physiology. And another thing you can do, which is really helpful, is your posture. You know, because we tend to get a bit contracted or turned in ourselves when we're tense. So again, just changing your posture, opening up a bit or straightening up, stretching, sends a signal to your body that it's okay. We're okay. There's no real threat here. And simply being aware of, okay, there's a bundle of thought there that's not helpful. So I'm just going to let that be and just be aware of the space around it and be open to what else might occur to me. Because you'll find that when you allow yourself to open up, you will have access to higher quality thinking that will help you move through your day with more ease and more grace. And you'll find that a lot of the stuff you think you have to do, you actually don't. Yeah.
They're not as important. Yeah. I try to sometimes look at them and go, is it going to matter 5 years from now? Right. And exactly. If the answer is probably not, then it's not a high priority on the to-do list.
Yeah.
Which I think helps with that being open to allow other things that are more important to take place.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Now, in your talk, you talked about your cells and your thoughts affect your cells. And your cells and how they're reacting is a signal. Can you explain that to the audience? Because when I listened, I literally hit pause, I rewound, and I listened to it again because I thought, never thought of it that way, but that is so true.
Yeah. I mean, well, I think one of the things to recognize is the intelligence of the body. You know, our cells are not inanimate objects. They are living, breathing, alive collections of atoms and molecules and whatnot. And if you think about the miracle of the human body, we have 37 trillion cells, roughly. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever tried to coordinate a team of more than two people. It's a lot of work. Yeah. We're just trying to get people coordinated. Can you imagine coordinating a team of 37 trillion, not just for one deadline, but for multiple deadlines every day, again and again? So when you stand back a little bit and look at the orchestration of the body, it has a natural intelligence that just knows what it's doing. It knows it breathes. It knows how to breathe. It knows how to, you know, to beat our heart. It knows how to grow our hair. It knows how to heal cuts. It does everything for us, and it's not run by our personal minds. You know, we think our intellects are in charge of everything, and they're an important part of us, but they're not the big picture. They're just like the laptop. They're not actually the user. So beginning to recognize that our cells have an innate intelligence within them, and they are working perfectly in a system where they're coordinated in their activity. Recognizing that and respecting that intelligence and working with it is actually really helpful for your well-being. So you can have conversations with your cells. You know, you can ask your body, what does it need? What do you need right now? And a good little experiment to do is go shopping with no agenda in the supermarket and just allow yourself to pick up what your body needs. Mm-hmm. And I did this one time and I found I had like Brazil nuts and dark chocolate and a whole bunch of other things. It was like, oh, I'm short of essential fats. I needed essential fats in my diet and I wasn't aware of it. So understanding that there's a dialogue that's happening between our mind and our bodies. Our thoughts influence our cells, and it's like our body speaks to us in a language, the language of feelings, I would say. So there's a communication that's happening both ways, and it's learning to speak the language to understand how to get the best of living with your body.
I love that. I love that. I've been in medical for many years. I love the human body. I love learning about it. You know, you talked about, you know, it intrigued you with people who were thriving. And what were they doing differently? Did you do any research on that, or did you just notice in the patients, like the Kate and the Kathy, that what were they doing differently that allowed them to heal and thrive versus maybe those who didn't have that same mentality?
Yeah, I think one of the important things was that they had a hungry desire to live. You know, they were up against mortality and it made them realize how much they wanted to live. So having that is a key part of this, because not everybody has that. But, you know, so for these people that I learned from, that was a key part of things. They valued life. They wanted to live. They just speaking to them all individually, they had their own ways of doing things, but essentially they got themselves into a state that allowed them to be comfortable with themselves. Kathy watched comedies and went for walks in nature, you know, with her husband. So she did things that brought her a sense of comfort and, you know, natural joy. So they made sure that they did the things that they loved as much as they could. And at the same time, they brought in that state, they brought their intention, they brought their attention to the intention of full recovery or, you know, a clear system, whatever they were focusing on, again and again and again. And they also had, an unshakable faith in life, in something bigger than we tend to believe. So, so they weren't swayed by other people's opinions of what was or wasn't possible. They knew for themselves what was true for them, and they followed that.
Yeah, that's awesome. So it was just the want to live and engaging with life is really the difference.
Yes, and acting on it, you know, acting on it from, well, this is what I really want. They also, as a practical point, they had set something as an intention a few months down the line. So for Kate, it was getting out of hospital, walking out of hospital. For other people I worked with, it was going to a wedding that was special to them. So they had something to aim for down the line. And then they broke up their journey into smaller pieces, just piece by piece, day by day. What can I do today to focus on this and to give my cells the best possibility to do well here? So
having something that you can look forward to, that excites you, that is a moment that you're striving towards, gives you that focus in the future to plan and prepare for, and maybe the baby steps to get there. So women could find that not just in an event, you know, like a wedding, or the unfortunate challenge of needing to get up and walk out of the hospital again and being in that situation, but, you know, baby steps as well, as women can say, you know, I have this goal. I want to become a published author, or I want to run a marathon, and whatever the goal or the challenge is, but having something to look forward to gives them that want to live and engage in life.
Yes, absolutely. And also the sense that they held true to knowing that it was possible. They just knew it was possible. An example for the published author thing is, I remember years ago I went to a conference for writers, and there were 600 people in this big hall for the start of the conference. And the first thing they did was they handed out A4 sheets of paper with information of how unlikely it is to get published. And they were saying, you know, 94% of people who write a book never get published. And I thought, that's a way to start, you know. So I ripped it up. You know, you've got to, I think if you feel something's right for you, and it has to feel true in your core, that this is the right thing for you, and it's really a true passion or a true desire for you, then, you know, stick to that. Don't be dissuaded by other people's opinions if you know what's true for you.
Yeah, and I think that can relate to a physician. You know, in your talk, you talked about physicians and how they don't necessarily give you the outcome, but they express the possibilities. You know, the giving you, even if it was, you know, a study and you got the placebo, but you didn't know you had the placebo, it's the possibility of what that could be doing for you made the difference to someone. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I think the most powerful combination is when you have a person who has a health challenge, who is keen, who is focused on recovery, and you have a physician who is open to possibilities. And, you know, that those two together, I think, are a very potent combination to help give them the best possibility for a good outcome.
Yeah. What would you advice would you give to our listeners, as far as either advice from you or through your tenure as a physician, to women that is a little bit of wisdom or can impact them in a way to make their journey a little less bumpy?
Okay. That's a good question. I would say you have access to a level of wisdom that is so much bigger than we realize when you let go of the noise of personal thinking. Yeah. When you allow your mind to settle, you'll have access to this wisdom, and it will be the most powerful potent guide for you in your life. It's designed for you. It knows what's right for you, and you can trust it.
Yeah, I love that. Now, you're an executive transformational coach, so you work with C-suite and leadership and obviously high levels of stress, you know, very challenging careers, I would assume. What advice and what practices do you help them with to guide and level out the stress or to overcome some of those challenges?
The work I do with people really is around understanding the human system more deeply, understanding the nature of thought, the power of thought, and our true relationship with it, so that you can work with it in a way that allows you to feel more freedom, to feel more inner empowerment, to have more clarity of purpose, and to have better relationships, you know, connecting not from your mind with people, but connecting from a deeper place, you know, your heart. Yeah. And really just being a living example for other people rather than telling them what to do. You know, if you become it and you be it, they see it and they follow it. So, and, you know, we often go into the science behind it, because the science is there. The physics is there of the impact of when we shift our state of being, it has an impact on the environment around us, and other people feel it. So it's a real deal, and it changes people's lives when they begin to open up to this.
I can tell. The energy sometimes that you feel when you're present with someone who understands that is different than the energy of someone who's just trying to rush through and go about, you know, what the goal and the intention is, not necessarily the leveling out and the being.
Absolutely. And that's the difference. It's the difference between doing all the time and actually being. And people sense that they feel safe in that presence, whereas they feel slightly edgy if someone's just caught in their thinking all the whole time. So this work is so helpful, not just for their professional lives, but, you know, it helps hugely with leadership skills, but it also helps with personal lives and personal relationships, and just your ability to have a sense of inner success as well as outer success. You can do well, you know, with have all the stuff, but actually be empty inside. And yeah, this work brings you alive again and connects you with that feeling of fulfillment.
Yeah. I love that. So I was noodling around on your LinkedIn page the other day, and I read one of your posts, and I wanted to share it here on the podcast because I read it and then I reread it because I thought it was powerful. And it's something that I have something similar that's hanging in my bathroom that I usually read every morning. And so your post was, "Last weekend, for the first time, I saw the Northern Lights, a breathtaking moment of wonder in which silence was better than words. Trillions of charged particles from the Earth's magnetic field collide with gases in the upper atmosphere to bring the auroras to life. I found myself transfixed and very aware that we are part of something far bigger. Everything is interconnected. We're living in a field of intelligent energy, exchanging information between everyone and everything. We're broadcasting and receiving energy every moment, mostly subliminally. The energy we broadcast leaves an imprint on the field, which ripples out to impact everyone and everything. It physically changes the fabric of reality. Becoming conscious of what we're broadcasting is growing up. When we know this, we can choose the imprints we want to leave on the fabric of the world every day. It's up to us to choose wisely. I absolutely loved reading that.
Thank you.
And I thought to myself, if we all pause and realize the energy we're giving off to others and the energy we have and how it's affecting our body sometimes, you know, going back to that stress response and slowing down to take in the moment or to realize what we're in the middle of doing and how it's impacting us physically, I think could make a world of difference in some lives.
Absolutely. It's probably the most important thing to realize is that, you know, thoughts are not, they're not nothing. They're bundles of mental energy, and they have an impact. First thing it impacts is your body, because that's the closest thing to them. But, you know, it ripples out and it affects other people. And it's people you may never meet, but it affects everything because everything is interconnected. And this is something that I think some indigenous cultures teach their children. It's the first thing they learn is the web of life, is that whatever thought you're thinking, you know, if you have the thought, I love someone, I love you, then that has a lovely ripple effect on, you know, your parents, your pet, your best friends, you know, people you won't meet. And equally, I hate you has a similar ripple effect on people that you love. So it's so important that we become conscious of what we're broadcasting, because it's not nothing. It has an impact, particularly if we repeatedly buy into those kinds of thoughts. So choosing thoughts that feel better is a responsibility, I think, of becoming a conscious society.
Yeah. Yeah. I loved the post. If anybody wants to look at it and read it again, it's on your LinkedIn page for reference. It's where I found it when I was noodling around. But I read it and I thought, I got to print that. I need to make sure I read it and share it with everyone, because it impacted me. It was, you know, becoming conscious of what we're broadcasting is growing up. And I thought, man, that's powerful. If you step back and think about it, I mean, there's times when I'd have a stressful day and on my way home from work, I would literally sit in the car to decompress for a few minutes before I got out and went in the house with my family because of the traffic that I was just in. You know, I lived just outside DC, and it was that time I took, because I didn't want to bring that in with me, that harried craziness of what I just went through. But I think we can think about that and relate it to just about any moment in our life. And I think it's important to teach children the same exact thing, right? Like their thoughts and their energy, others can feel.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's a lovely thing that you do, you know, stopping outside just to gather yourself so that you don't bring that energy to other people. You don't want to, you know, it's like COVID, you don't want to spread it. If you, you know, put your mask on, sit still for a minute, you know, until everything settles, and then engage. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So how can our listeners get a hold of you and reach out if they wanted to connect?
Sure. I guess the easiest way is through my website, which is libbymcgugan.me. And there are links to connect, and there's also a paper in there you might be interested in, Wellbeing at Work, which you can download. And if they wanted to read more about the book, which is The Power of the Lemon, this one here is what it looks like, that's available in Balboa Press and on Amazon. Mm-hmm. So yeah, those are the best ways to connect. Mm-hmm. And LinkedIn is the other.
Yeah. And I'll make sure all of that is listed in our show notes so that everybody has an easy way to link into you. So a few questions that I ask all of my guests before we wrap up. What are you most proud of?
Discovering my true nature. Discovering that there's more to me and everybody else than our thinking. Yeah. And getting an experience of what that is. What that feels like.
What advice would you give your 20-year-old self?
relax, it's okay. Don't worry about it, you'll figure it out. Keep trusting life. Life's on your side.
Great advice. What brings Libby joy?
Goodness, this. I love, you know, one of the things that lights me up the most, well, being with my gorgeous partner, that's the first thing. That brings me joy. You know, and living every day, I think connecting with your true nature brings you this base level, this background level of joy, which is just your new baseline. But in particular, I love seeing people light up. I love seeing people when they get it and they realize they have so much more inside them, and they begin to move from that place and live from that place. That I love that. So that's why I do what I do now. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us on our podcast, Wisdom of Women.
Thank you so much.
Until next time. Yeah. Thanks so much. See you everyone next week on another episode.
Much for tuning in to Wisdom of Women. I hope you enjoyed our conversation and gained some valuable insights and inspiration. How to connect with me and our guest today, as well as any links, can be found in the show notes. Please share this episode with your friends. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe to our podcast and leave us a review, as it helps us reach more women like you who are seeking to learn from successful women leaders. Stay curious, stay hungry, and always push forward. We'll be back next week with another amazing guest. Until then, keep chasing your dreams, and we'll see you next time on